I have big news.
You're rich?
I'm rich. Ole, 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 ole.
Yeah, so tell me and everybody else about it. What happened?
So after the Jason Kuhn episode, all right, let me stop myself there. If you didn't listen to last episode, I don't know if I want you to stop this one and listen to that one now or listen to it after. Either way is fine with me. But make sure you leave 5 stars and subscribe on iTunes and do all that fun stuff. So after the Jason Kuhn episode, which is my favorite episode we've ever done, and I've probably said that about like 30 different episodes, which is fine because they're all my babies. They're all my favorites besides like a couple of them. But Jason Kuhn episode was really, really good. Not because of us, because of him, because he is the man. He is – it was like him and Maria Konnikova.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that correctly?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I feel like that's the first time you've gotten that right.
I'm always nervous and I'm saying the tennis player's name and I'm mixing them up. It's a... So she impressed me, but that was like to be expected because she's like a PhD and award-winning author and New York Times bestseller. It was like, yeah, of course she's going to impress us. Like, and then there's been a few other people who have just been like really good and really cool. But Jason Kuhn is just like, you know, he has stories from Macau. He's so laid back. He's like just so well spoken and like humble and just everything about him just impressed me. And we talked to him for like 90 minutes. And here's how you know I'm an idiot, because when I was editing it, it kept saying like an hour and 20 minutes. So it's like 1:20, but I kept thinking that meant 2 hours, like, oh, well, an hour, 60 minutes. So I was like, wow, we did like 2.5 hours with Jason Kuhn. So I like titled all the podcasts, like over 2 hours with Jason Kuhn, not realizing an hour, 20 minutes is an hour, 20 minutes, not over 2 hours. But anyway, I say all that to say after the Jason Kuhn interview, I was kind of inspired to play again because I hadn't really been playing that much. So I get money from our dear friend, Ryan DiPaolo, who is an ACR shill, and so he sends me money on ACR, and I play, this is last Thursday, I play an $88 tournament, and I finish 11th for $600. It was 9K for first, and I was pretty bummed about that. I think I played fine. Probably should have, these tournaments, they get really, really short deep, like really short. I think average stack was like 18 blinds. At one point I was like 6 out of 15, and then you fold like 4 hands, and then you're like 12th out of 15 with like 12 bigs. And I ended up shoving sixes in the kings to finish 11th. So I was feeling fine after that. I was like, all right, maybe I don't suck at poker anymore. And then I played on Sunday and I bricked everything. And I was like, well, that sucks. And I was down to not very much money. And then I played again on, what was it, Monday? Or Tuesday? No, Monday. And I ended up finishing second in a $55 60K guaranteed for $5,600. My best score in who knows how long, Jake.
Nice.
10 years. I don't even know how long it's been. Okay, you don't have to clap for me or whatever. Congratulate me. That's fine.
What, Edison, what a beast.
I'll edit in some clapping and like round of applauses. Probably like 15 straight minutes of clapping.
I texted you yesterday congratulating you.
So, yeah, thank you. It felt great. You do this every time you play poker. I can't even imagine how great. No wonder you're always like happy and optimistic. Like, no shit. Like, making so first place was 9K, second place was 5600. That's a big heads up. Like, I wasn't really prepared to play a $3,600 heads up. What's that?
Not that big.
$3,600 is a lot of money for some of us.
No, I'm not saying that 36, but I'm saying
I'm talking pure money wise. Like, it's like, sure. Ooh, there's a lot of money between first and second.
Yeah, man, but any heads up match that you get to at a reasonable.
Right. No, I know. That's the only time I even thought about it. I was like, oh shit, like that's a big heads up. But the final table, I was down, like, everybody was, besides one guy who had, like, most of the chips. Everybody was down below 10 big blinds at some point. And then I went into heads up. He had 75 bigs, and I had 23 bigs. And he was very aggressive heads up, and I lost.
Okay.
Well, but
that's a great run.
No, it was great. I feel like I only got it in bad and won, like, twice.
Okay.
So I think I played pretty good. I ran good. Obviously, I, like, won my flips. Did lose.
You're going to have to run good to make final tables.
I think I would have won the tournament. At the final table, small blind versus big blind, I was big blind. The small blind shoved, like, his last, like, 9 bigs into me, and I think I had, like, 20 bigs. And I had ace 10 of spades, and he had ace deuce, and he hit a deuce on the river. And I think had I won that hand, I would have won the tournament. But alas, it was not meant to be.
It was still impressive that you came back from 10 bigs after that.
It was nerve-wracking. You have to make, like, really nitty folds because there's people with, like, 4 bigs. And there's, like, pay jumps. And there's overlay in this tournament. So, like, the pay jumps are just, like, wacky. Like, I guess – or is it generally, like, pay jumps are bigger when there's overlay in the tournament? Like, I mean, it's more top-heavy?
It depends how much, but
– It was, like, $200 pay jumps from, like, 9th, 8th, 7th.
I guess that's probably more the payout structure than the overlay. If there's a lot of overlay, then first place generally will be more or will be weighted more.
So I was feeling pretty high on myself after that. And then last night I decided to donate a ton back, and I lost a ton last night.
Yeah, I told you just to withdraw some.
The thing is, I'm going to end up playing $5,000 worth of tournaments anyway, so I might as well just keep it in my account. The only reason to withdraw some or send some away would be so I don't do it all at once. But yeah. I don't know. I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay. Well, you do you, man.
Also,
my suggestion.
The 215s are no harder than, like, the 55s or, like, the 1650s. It's all – I'm not impressed. Or maybe I just have a – maybe I just think I'm better than I am because I get second in one tournament.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're a superstar on top of the world. But you have a tiny itch. I mean, it's good that you're playing.
But we've talked about this before. Like, when you do well in one tournament, it gives you the confidence to then do well in future tournaments. You're like, oh, wait, maybe I don't suck.
Yeah. My guess is you're both full of confidence in yourself and you're probably drastically underestimating the caliber of people you're playing against.
Dude, I don't know. I was playing with some of these people and I was looking them up. There's this one guy who I thought was, like, the worst player at the table, and I look him up and he has, like, 3 million in online winnings, and I'm just like, how is that possible?
Yeah. Well, who knows?
He was, like, some Portuguese bro, and I was just like, everything he did I found weird. But maybe he's so good that I just couldn't even comprehend it.
Maybe.
Which brings me to something Phil Galfond just said. Did you see this?
I did.
So Phil Galfond, our pal, our good friend, been on the show. He did a tweet and a iPhone note about Phil Hellmuth. And I'll just read the tweet first. He goes, this is Phil Galfond. He goes, we so often criticize the plays we see on TV from the comfort of our couches. I think it's only fair to also give credit where credit is due. I recently watched Phil Hellmuth on Poker Go's High Stakes Duel.
You okay?
How do you say that word?
How do you say duel?
Duel.
Just say Tool, yeah.
Jake Tool. I recently watched Phil Hellmuth on TV and wrote down some thoughts. And basically, he goes into a 4 iPhone note thread. It starts with saying, when you see a talented poker player make decisions, that seem wrong to you, you have to ask yourself, are they making bad plays or do they know something I don't? You often will never learn the answer to that question. Unsatisfying, I know. Nevertheless, I believe it's an important one to ponder, especially regarding your opponents, but even if you're just watching poker icons battle out on TV. He goes on to say, Phil Hellmuth is one of those iconic poker players in the world. It must be frustrating for Phil that he never really gets the respect from his peers. Everybody says how bad he is. Phil Galfond says that he's never publicly criticized Phil's play, but he admits that he has privately. He does a lot of strange things that can't possibly be right, like folding hands with seven big blinds. No way he knows a weird secret about technical spots like that, right? So then he says that he watches Phil battle Antonio Esfandiari on Poker Go in this high-stakes duel heads-up challenge show. And he said he expected Antonio to be a favorite because he plays in the bigger, deep-stacked cash games, blah, 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 blah. And Phil Galfond says about Phil Hellmuth, my perception of Phil's game changed dramatically for the better. What I saw wasn't heads up, no limit, technical mastery. It was an uncanny ability to assess and adapt to every spot he found himself in. Specifically in the second match, Phil's reads on each and every hand were incredible, and he chose lines that, while often unorthodox, intelligently capitalized on his dead-on read of each situation. I'd like to formally apologize to Phil Hellmuth for how long it took me to realize just how talented he is. He can make all the ridiculous folds he wants from now on, and I promise I'll still respect his game.
Okay. What do you think about that?
What do I think about that?
Yeah.
I think Phil Hellmuth, I think we've said it on the show before, that he clearly knows what he's doing in some aspect, and he knows perfectly how to use his image to his advantage, and there's a reason he wins.
Mm-hmm.
If he would just get coaching from someone that isn't Mike Mattisau, if he would just sit down with a Phil Galfond and let Galfond like just explain different spots and why he plays them so poorly, then Hellmuth could be so much better. But
yeah, I mean, this was, you know, it was nice of Phil Galfond to kind of, you know, summarize all of his thoughts about Hellmuth, but it's not really anything that we haven't, you know, that a lot of people haven't already thought or realized, that there's very clearly things that Phil Hellmuth does well. He clearly has good intuition, good instincts. He has his own game plan, as wacky as it seems sometimes. And yeah, for sure, you know, can make adjustments on the fly, especially versus somebody who, you know, he knows so well and has played, you know, so many hands against.
Phil has that innate ability that he probably can't explain. And there's probably not, you know, When people argue, do people have the clutch gene? Is clutch real? Is the hot hand real? And it's like, you can't scientifically prove it, but there's obviously something to it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, on the other hand, I don't know how much of this duel you've watched, if any.
None.
I watched a little bit. And then there's just like shit like, they play this hand where Phil like takes this like ridiculous line where he like, I think he defends ace three suited. He check calls. I think it maybe was jack four. And Phil check raises flop. Antonio calls with 8-5 off, turns a six. Phil bets. Antonio calls. Or no, maybe Antonio raises. I don't know, whatever. And then Phil checks dark, and the river is an ace, and Antonio goes out and moves in. Phil ends up tank calling, and then like him kind of like talking about it after was like, he was like, oh, I was gonna, you know, I was gonna move in myself, or maybe I was just gonna call. And Antonio's like, well, what are you talking about? You check dark, how are you gonna move in? Like, no, so it's just like stuff like that where It doesn't really make any sense what he's saying. It doesn't really make any sense how he played the hand.
A lot of times.
You get a lot of stuff like that with him in there.
Yeah, a lot of times his logic, like talking through a hand, is the opposite, like the stone opposite of what like a Galfond would say. Like like Phil's reasoning can make sense to him, and then Galfond would be like, "That's the exact wrong reason to do something."
I would say basically, I don't know, any person that plays poker for a living or any person that that you would think is like a good player would never ever play that hand like remotely the same. And this is one of those instances where I think it just happened to work out for him. It wasn't necessarily him like having good intuition.
That happens a lot too. I remember reading like poker news updates when Phil won his 15th bracelet, and it was insane how good he ran in the biggest spots. And that will happen, I know, and doesn't really hold any water, but I would guess, you know how Jason Kuhn said that out of 100 lifetimes he's in the top 10% of, I think Phil is in the top 1%. Things go his way.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's also he, like, you know, if we're going to kind of measure his ability to, you know, have that quote unquote white magic or intuition that we talk about, even when the game was much more primitive back in, you know, the late 80s through the 90s, even, you know, into the early 2000s, I think his ability to do well in that type of setup is still there. So yeah, maybe he's still, you know, he's still in the top, whatever, 5-10 percentile of 100 fills. I still think that, you know, his skill set and his ability to kind of do what he does was significantly more effective, you know, back then.
He did win the Borgata heads up.
Yeah, I know. And the crazier thing to me is not that he made it, it's that he's continued to do well over the last 10 years. You just cannot argue with
him. I think his best skill that goes unchecked or unmeasured is his ability just to frustrate his opponents just by playing unorthodox. But he, as you said, like, he has a plan. I don't think he's coming into it completely reckless. I think he does have a plan, but he's very good at just frustrating people. It's like when, a baseball pitcher could, you know, set, unset, pick up the rosin bag, lean in for the pitch, throw over to first. Like, you can just do little things to frustrate your opponents.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think Phil is very good at playing against recreationals, getting them to do what he wants, especially in a live setting. It's I doubt.
And how do you explain him beating Antonio?
Yeah, I don't know. I would say that I would guess that he knows Antonio's game really well. What works? What's going to get under his skin? Kind of like what you're saying. And Antonio just can't help himself. If Antonio made like one or two adjustments, I think he would, you know, probably destroy him. But, you know, he's kind of digs his heels in and plays with an ego. And, you know, that's why he's losing. I think, again, I haven't watched too much of it. Maybe he's running bad. But that's just my perspective from, you know, not seeing too much of it. When I have watched it, it's just basically Antonio just kind of spewing and blasting off and just trying to bluff Phil every single hand, regardless of the action, and just
trying to be a TV superstar.
Yeah, maybe he's just bored. Maybe he's just too rich. Who knows?
Yeah. So Phil Galfond said that, and Fedor Holtz replied in a very Fedor way. It says, "He punted every 300K I've seen him play in, so I don't share your view. I think he's a clear losing player in tougher lineups and mostly plays a style that exploits versus tighter, weaker opponents and WSOP and old school player tendencies. I find it entertaining to play against him. Olivier Bousquet, your good friend. Easily one of the silliest... This isn't not in reply to Fedor. This is in reply to Galfond. Easily one of the silliest things I've ever read from someone I respect. Misses the point or is flat out wrong on almost every substantive? That's not a word.
Yeah, it is.
Whatever. I can't read. I can't speak. Misses the point or is flat out wrong on almost every issue, and an actual formal apology to the most obnoxious, disrespectful, self-promoting egomaniac in the industry. It's like Stockholm Syndrome. Timex, Mike McDonald, says, plus one. He agrees to that. Harlebob, I watched based on this tweet. Curious which hands or reads specifically impressed you most. Maybe this tweet gave me unrealistic expectations, but I came away thinking this was a fairly pedestrian heads-up match. Brandon Shaq Harris said, nice write-up, Phil. Let's see if any other major players replied. Eric Frolik agreed?
Yeah, I mean, it's... I didn't really understand it, to be honest.
You know what? It's so perfect because... Once as polarizing as Helmuth is, now Galfond's take on Helmuth is equally as polarizing, and it's still about the same exact argument: is Helmuth good at poker or not? Which is the crux of the entire thing, because Helmuth always whines that he doesn't get the respect for being good. Now Galfond is like, wow, maybe he's actually good, and now all the other poker players are mad that Galfond is saying that he's actually good.
Yeah, I mean. I was just confused by why he even wrote that. I don't know.
Dan Smith replies to Galfond and says, on your side of the argument, people have some nice things to say. The people on the other side of the argument are willing to bet really big.
Willing to what?
Bet really big. So he's like, people will say nice things, but will they bet on Helmuth?
Right.
Sam Greenwood, funny reply. I've typed up and deleted a couple responses to this, and in honor of positivity, I'm going to post something different. Phil Galfond is the nicest guy in poker.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like a classic Galfond post where he's just like Mr. Nice Guy and, you know, always finding the positivity in something.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But he didn't really have to do this. Like, nobody was Phil Galfond's opinion of Phil Helmuth's heads-up game is... But then again, I trust Galfond's judgment probably more than anybody's, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So if he saw something, then I have no reason not to believe him.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe he has some, like, weird, like, Helmuth guilt over his...
Yeah.
Like the two negative thoughts he's ever had in his life.
Yeah. Yeah. He just woke up in a sweat because he thought Helmuth played one hand bad in 2014. So he did a four note to write about it.
Yeah.
Yep. Here's the best one. Best response. Geniuses are often misunderstood. And you know why I think that's the best one? Let me tell you, not to get off on a tangent here. I went on the Chicago Dog Walk podcast. It's with the Barstool Chicago people. And Jake, I need your opinion here. Okay. And I already know what you're going to say. But I consider myself a genius as well. And in the Dog Walk draft, there's like a topic. And ours was villains. And you had to pick a movie villain, a video game villain, an athlete villain, a Disney character villain, and a superhero villain. For my movie villain, I picked the asteroid from Armageddon. And they gave me shit for it.
I was giving you shit too.
And I was saying, and a villain doesn't have to be a person. Like, oh no, like anybody can Google top movie villains and rattle off like the Joker or It or whatever. Like anybody can do that.
I mean, I think a villain has to be a person.
So I don't think a villain has to be a person, and I'm about to put your mind in a pretzel with my other examples.
Okay.
The villain in The Big Short is what? The banking system.
Oh, okay.
Right? The system. The villain in Spotlight is what? The Catholic Church. So an institution can be a villain. The asteroid in Armageddon caused more tension, more problems. And then the good guys, Bruce Willis, Ben Affleck, the oil drillers, had to go up and stop the bad guy from killing everybody. And it's not like the Joker killing a couple people here and there. It's wiping out humanity. It's destroying planet Earth, all of history. That's why the asteroid is the bad guy. It doesn't have to know it's the bad guy to be the bad guy in the movie.
I can tell you've done a lot of defending of this.
A ton of defending of this, and I'm finally able to say it into a microphone. Why does a villain have to have a soul?
I'm just looking at that, like the dictionary definition of villain.
It says, I've looked at it, it says character, right?
Yeah, but, yeah, so the Random House dictionary defines it as a character, cruelly malicious person who's involved and devoted to wickedness or crime, scoundrel, character in a play, novel, or the like, who constitutes an important evil agency in the plot.
Okay, but what characterizes a character? Like, the asteroid is a character in the movie.
No. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, but let's not start to...
Okay, here's a question.
An asteroid is a character.
What about the nail in A Quiet Place?
Yeah, well, I got tagged by... Shout out to...
Cakes,
the,
yeah.
The Cakes. That was cruel of him.
I forgot about that.
I saw that.
I couldn't decide what the villain in A Quiet Place was, because it's not the aliens. It's either noise itself or the nail. The nail makes you cover your eyes for like a half hour at a time.
Why is the villain not the alien?
Because we don't even know where the aliens come from. Like we don't know anything about the aliens. They just react to the noise.
Yeah, but from the point of view of our protagonists, they're the villain.
You know who the real villain is? It's the fucking kid with his spaceship. That's the real villain.
That kid died, didn't he?
Yeah, because he was like, oh, I need to play with my spaceship. Actually, who was it? It was his sister that hands him the batteries like a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Why would she do that?
I don't know.
She knows they shouldn't even have batteries.
What?
Like, batteries should be illegal.
No, they need batteries for I don't know. I guess I don't really know for what, but...
I can't remember. Generators or something.
Yeah, like they probably need those.
But remember that nail, and then she steps on it?
Yeah, of course. But no, I mean, no, I don't think the nail is a villain.
The only, I think if I could redo it, instead of choosing the asteroid, I would have chosen Catholic Church.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you can make more of an argument for that, for sure. But it's like, yeah, the Catholic Church, but then it's like specific people or specific members of the Catholic Church.
There's a great line in the movie, and I don't know it word for word, but they're like, we don't want to bring down the people. We want to bring down the entire institution.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
I mean, yeah, you could definitely make more of an argument for that, I think.
I think people are more willing to allow that because they're still technically people.
Right.
Whereas the asteroid can't cognitively decide that it's going to destroy Earth. But my argument is that doesn't matter because it is the antagonist of the movie. It's the reason. So, like, it's movies, good guys versus bad guys. The good guys were the oil drillers. The bad guy was the asteroid.
Yeah, I mean, I think I disagree, but...
You're not alone. But, no, people have agreed with me as well.
I mean, I get the point that you're trying to make, but...
I I just think...
I guess I don't really have anything to refute it with other than the fact that it's not alive doing, you know, trying to create harm and chaos like on purpose.
Yeah, I get that. I just don't find that necessary. I don't think that's a...
Like, couldn't you make the argument? Couldn't you make the argument that the Earth is the villain in that? Because all the asteroid is doing is being a rock that's floating through space, and something is getting in its way, and that's just the Earth.
I like where you're going with that, because I was thinking the iceberg was the villain in Titanic, but that's the iceberg's water. The iceberg was minding its own damn business, and then the boat ran into it. So I do not blame that iceberg for a single thing.
Yeah, I think I don't know what word you're looking for, but I think you're stretching what a villain is.
Well, the way I look at it, not to just beat the dead horse, is a villain is the thing that causes the good guys to have to save the day. And, oh, you know what? I kind of get what you're saying about Earth now. If Earth wasn't there in the asteroid's way. But I do think they kind of share space. It's not like the iceberg that had been there for, you know, thousands of years. And then the
asteroid could have been there for much longer than
that. Yeah, we'd have to see a timetable.
I don't really know how the asteroids work.
I'm not sure either. I assume like something just blows up.
It's like Always Sunny. It's like, oh, I don't know enough about stars to refute it.
I don't want to give the iceberg a complete pass, because, you know, many of people still died. But there are many other factors. Speed, no binoculars. James Ismay, who worked for the White Star Line, who was the biggest scumbag ever.
You know how I feel about Titanic. We can keep talking.
You know how I feel about Titanic.
Yeah, I know.
Quite passionate. I think my biggest regret in life is I'm never going to be rich enough to take the submarine down to see the Titanic. If I had Jake Tool money and I finished 34th in the 2015 WSOP main event, that would have been my splurge. Not buy a condo, not investments, $30,000 to take the submarine down to see the Titanic.
Is that how much it costs?
Yeah. I think it would be worth it.
Oh, wait, no. James Cameron just went on. He went on a deep dive.
Many.
Semi-recently.
Yeah, he was trying to find some other shipwreck.
I mean, that'd be pretty sweet, but...
30,000 is not bad to be one of the only people to ever go down there.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of claustrophobic. That would...
It's not comfortable. You have to wear all sorts of headphones because of the pressure and whatever.
I go like 5.5 feet underwater. My ears start to hurt.
They take care of you. They make sure your head doesn't explode under the pressure. But it's definitely not comfortable.
Yeah.
It's kind of a deal when you think about it. It's very hard to go that far down into the ocean, and it's only 30K. But these manned space flights are like $1 million, right? If you just want to leave the atmosphere for 10 minutes, aren't they like really?
I have no idea.
If you were going to die tomorrow and they're like, all right, bad news. Not only are you going to die, but you can't give your money away to anybody. Like your money is just going to explode and light on fire the second you die. And you can't give it away. You have to use it on yourself while you're alive. What would you do?
Is it just between those two options or anything?
No, anything. But you have to do, let's just say you have to spend $100,000 immediately on yourself.
Oh, geez.
So like there's no reason to buy a tangible object because you're not allowed to give it to anybody and you can't take it with you. So you have to use it. I think I would go to space or go.
I'm dying tomorrow, or you know, can you give me a little bit more leeway?
I'll give you some prep time, sure.
All right. I'd probably travel to every place that I've wanted to. I'd probably go skydiving because I'm deathly afraid of that. But if I were to have to decide between going really far underwater or going up into, you know, the beginning of space, I would for sure go up in the beginning of space.
For the view?
Yeah, that just seems like such a cooler experience. Like, that's you're down that, underneath the water. You can't see anything.
Can't see anything, but you can see the Titanic.
You see, like, weird glow-in-the-dark fish, which I guess would be kind of cool, but also kind of scary.
I want to see the Titanic so bad, but whenever you see that view of Earth from space, that's so one of a kind. Yeah. That they
Plus, say, I just watched Away, and
did you watch it?
Yeah.
Oh, did you like it?
I liked it a lot.
I can't believe you didn't tell me. That was one of my recommendations.
Did you watch it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Okay. I don't know if you were paying attention on the show when I said this. I love the idea and the concept. I didn't love the writing of the show, but it was good enough. Like, it was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was fine. I
think I gave it a 7.6 out of 10 or something.
Yeah, I would probably give it a little bit higher.
I think so, really, too, in retrospect.
I really liked it. I thought it was, a nice combination of good action and also pretty emotional and thrilling in some points.
I could have done without the motorbike girl.
The daughter?
Yeah. Like, every show doesn't need...
That's an important relationship.
I know. I feel like Homeland did it. Every show does it. It's just, sometimes I don't need it.
Yeah, I guess my only issue is, and I'm not sure, I mean, this is super common theme, but it's like, there's the grand mission, the overarching theme, where they're trying to go from Earth to Mars, be the first people, and then every episode is like... segmented into like what issue is going to break down this time on the ship,
which I guess I didn't mind as much as you did, because I kind of figured
that I didn't mind it. I was just like all right, like
I kind of thought it was cool. It's like, oh, I guess,
and then be resolved by the end of this episode.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
like every show though,
when you're stuck in a spaceship, you have to make it, you can't just have a smooth flight to Mars.
I mean, if I were going to die tomorrow, or if I were going to die, going to space would be sweet.
Would you kill somebody?
Doing a spacewalk?
Would you kill somebody?
Would I kill somebody?
You can kill anybody you want.
No.
Even a bad guy?
Probably not.
Ooh. That's a moral dilemma. You're going to die tomorrow, and you can kill anybody in the world without penalty, but including bad people.
I mean, I don't think it's really a moral time, because you're going to die, so it doesn't. There's no repercussions.
So shouldn't you kill, like, a terrorist?
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but I probably wouldn't.
So you're the guy that doesn't kill Hitler. Okay, got it. Jake pro-Hitler.
Well, that's a different question. When I go back and kill...
No, there's current Hitlers, too. They just have better HR or PR.
those people tend to do themselves in.
All right, Jake's a. I'd like it on record. We are not a pro Hitler podcast.
No, we are not.
Are you caught up on The Boys?
No, I think I've watched 4 episodes.
Oh well, that's my favorite show on TV right now.
Yeah, it's great.
All right, let's answer a couple poker questions.
Oh wait, I wanted to talk about just quickly the. I think it's the Midway Poker Tour.
The Midway Poker Tour, Chicago, Illinois.
Is that what it's called? Yeah. So just to sum it up, for those who don't know, they were, they were back holding this poker series out in Chicago. And apparently they thought it would be smart to pay out everybody in precious metals, or like some combination of cash and precious metals, which I guess is just gold and silver.
Yep.
That they were doing it with. And, people were like, what the fuck? Like, first of all, who does this? Second of all, like, where are you getting these precious metals from that you just, like, have instead of money? And third, they ended up being worth, like, a third of what the guaranteed prize pool in USD would have been. And then I think, like, at the final table, the tournament director and, like, one of the, maybe, like, the casino manager or the floor manager, they didn't even show up to the final table. So I think it was a huge shit show. And apparently the guys who ran it said he's gonna make everyone whole, but
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, from what I got is they can only pay out X amount in cash because of dumb laws. So they have these precious metals on the scene where they give you those, and then you're supposed to immediately be able to sell them back for the cash value. The person they got these precious metals from is like a scam artist, so they weren't even worth as much as they were supposed to be worth. And how did it conclude?
Everyone basically lost 30%, and the tournament director said he's going to make everybody whole, I assume, by hopefully just sending them real money, not random silver.
So who's the real villain here? Is it the tournament director or the law?
Well, I don't really know the specifics of the law, but I can almost guarantee you that it's the tournament director.
I can almost 100% promise you that.
I mean, because if it was the law, you would think that everybody who's from there, out there, have experienced this, gone through this before.
Yeah.
And they would know what to expect, but it seemed to have caught everybody off guard, so.
Jake, I have a couple of poker questions for you before we wrap up. Is this episode 80? Shout out to Harry Glenn.
It sounds right.
Julian Edelman.
No, he's 11.
Mm. Wes Welker.
I don't know, man. I don't know anybody other than Edelman and Brady and maybe Gronk. Is Gronk 87?
Yes.
All right, seven more till I'll know one.
I feel like you should know that. No, wait. Oh, Danny Amendola. That's who I was thinking of. Episode 80. Shout out Danny Amendola. I'm Nate. That's Jake. Poker questions. Before we wrap up, this episode has flown by. Jake, online tells. Do they exist?
Yeah, I mean, they can.
And what do you look for?
Mostly timing tells. I mean, you're always going to be looking into bet sizing.
And so what are you looking for?
I don't know. I don't really look for that. I don't really look for timing tells, but I do look for, you know, basically unbalanced bet sizes. But, you know, again, that's kind of a slippery slope because you really need a lot of data to really, you know, have that theory supported.
If you've never played with a player before, you can't really make an assumption that he bet 1/4 the pot on the river because you've never played with that player before.
Right. I mean, you know, you certainly can look for sizings that give away, you know, strength or weakness.
Which can you explain what that would mean though? Like what gives away strength in a sizing?
I don't know. Let's just say, like somebody raises and you call, and I don't know. There's let's say like it comes like king high with a flush draw. They bet, you call, turns a brick. They're betting, let's say, 2/3 to 3/4 pot on both streets. You call and the river completes the flush. And then you see like a down bet of, you know, let's say a third pot or 25% pot. Now versus like good players, they're going to be able to, you know, be balanced here and, you know, size their flushes this way too. But that's certainly an example of.
I wouldn't know what to think there. Am I thinking, oh, he's betting small because he wants me to get better odds to call and pay off his flush, or is he betting small because he's scared?
Well, that's what you have to think about.
Yeah. So which way are you supposed to look at that?
I mean, you have to try to think, you know, take as much into account as you can. I mean, your hand also really depends on, you know, affects the decision that you make. you know, if you have a some sort of hand that blocks a whatever flush card comes in, that's certainly something to take into consideration. How many fewer combos of flushes you think they might have. Or if, let's say, they're raising from the button or small blind or even cutoff, where they're going to have far more, far more offsuit combos of hands, where they'll, they might have more sets in two pair that they're trying to value bet, then you can start to kind of build, a range of hands in your mind of how, that they might put into that smaller down bet sizing in the river. And then you can kind of go from there. And if you let's say you just have like a weak top pair on this king high board, you can start to fold your weak top pairs when you kind of realize that they're not putting any bluffs into that range, et cetera. And then raise your flushes, raise your hands that have good blocker effects for on removing their flushes, et cetera. I don't know. It's kind of hard to come up with like a specific example. But that, something that you
maybe certainly shove and try to get them to fold a flush.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty ambitious. People don't really fold flushes.
How you finish second in $55 tournaments, not a big deal. Here's a question from Brendan.
Yeah.
What types of hands should check raise value, and what hands should check raise as bluffs?
Well, to be really general,
that's fine. Be as general as possible.
When you're check raising, this is like a ridiculously broad question. If you're check raising for value, you want to obviously check raise your strong hands. That will continue to get called by worse, and you also have to understand what types of boards are going to be more advantageous for you as the check raiser versus what boards are going to be better for the person who's raised and is betting. You might have flopped two pair, but the board might be generally more advantageous for the in position player, the person who raised. So you're going to do two things. You're going to let them keep bluffing by not check raising, and you're not going to bloat a pot where the in position player has a pretty huge range advantage. So like, let's say you defend ace two suited from the big blind versus a cutoff open, and it comes ace king deuce, versus most players, you're not going to check raise there. But that's up to you to decide. That's really up for you to decide if this is a kind of a weaker player who's, not going to fold any ace on any street and not going to like start to turn some hands into bluffs on turns and rivers and really kind of like put you in the cage. Or if they are going to do that, then that's when you start to not check raise that hand. As far as bluffs go, you always want to have some sort of equity, backdoor equity. Check raising open enders on different boards can be good. Check raising flush draws can be good. Again, this is like incredibly broad, but
that's fine.
Those are, generally good bluffs.
Yeah. A lot of times when I defend the big blind and, you hit a random two pair, I always wonder if it's better to just let them keep betting into you or try to get all the money in. And so I kind of like that question.
You also have to be careful, like check raising like queen 10 on queen 10 9 isn't necessarily like a winning play.
Because so many turns can kill you.
Well, so many turns, and again, you end up, bloating a pot where, let's say, you are trying to go for stacks and you check raise and then bet turn golem on river. Certainly not always. Sometimes you cooler people who have top and bottom pair. Other times people get too attached to top pair good kicker and over pair. But again, that is very opponent dependent.
Thoughts on the Mike Postle defamation lawsuit? Oh yeah, so apparently he's counter-suing for like $330 million. And what's crazy is he has like Scott Van Pelt in the lawsuit, like Joey in the lawsuit, all the people. I thought for sure Barstool Sports was going to be in that lawsuit because that his gimmick or burner account, the Rounder Life account, always tags Barstool in all them. But I guess the machine is too powerful or just.
Yeah. I'm shocked that Barstool isn't in there. But
I'm glad I don't want to have to deal with that bullshit. Yeah. Nothing. My thoughts is nothing will happen. He's a crazy person.
Yeah. Good luck, buddy.
All right, Jacob Toole.
Okay.
That's it for this week.
Good stuff.
Happy birthday to my brother.
Happy almost birthday. Oh, it's your brother's birthday?
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday to Scott.
That's not it.
Adam.
But oh yeah. So happy birthday to my brother. We were almost Irish twins. Is that what it's called? Irish twins when you're born in the same 365 days, like same year.
Oh, wow.
But so he was October 7th, 87. I'm October 10th, 88.
Oh, wow. Damn, that's crazy.
Yeah. So if you want to come into the city on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good.
We can blow each other.
I will plan on coming in. What are we going to do?
Oh, I don't know. Probably nothing.
Nothing?
Get blackout drunk.
All right.
32 years old.
Yeah, that's old.
It's old as hell.
You're so old.
So fucking old.
It's like I'm basically 40.
Basically dead.
Yeah, that too.
So that was episode 80 of the Cracking Aces podcast. Feel free to rate 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe, let us know what you think, follow us on Instagram and Twitter and everywhere else possible. Hopefully I will win, or I didn't even win. I was going to say win another tournament, but I got second. Hopefully I'll cash another tournament before next week. Jake will probably win some Sunday million and buy another dog. The next time we talk to you, I'll be a year older and probably in a wheelchair because I will be crippled because I'm so fucking old. And we will see you back here next dang week.
Thanks, guys. When's your birthday, the 10th?
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. I will wish you a happy birthday on your birthday, though.
We'll see.
What, are you doing anything special for it?
You're not throwing me a surprise party?
Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah. How would you answer that question?
That's what somebody would ask if they were throwing a surprise party.
Exactly. But now, if you don't throw me a surprise party and I'm waiting all... I don't make plans because I'm waiting for you to be like... hey, come to this place, and you never do, then I just don't do anything on my birthday, and you ruin my birthday. So now you have to throw me a surprise party.
No, it won't be a surprise, though. I think I'll wait. I'll keep you on your toes, maybe do it another year. You should definitely go ahead and make other plans.
That's what you want me to think, because you're throwing me the party. Wow.
I know who your friends are. I've talked to them. I've organized everything.
You guys are just going to have like a party at your apartment. That would be a surprise.
Yeah, you want to come over?
No.
We got the landscaping done yesterday.
You have some hurt. I don't know that flower. Hemorrhages? What's the flower?
I don't know. It sounds like you're combining something with hedges.
No, it's like her. This is a tough haranges.
No, we do not have that.
What is that flower called?
I have no idea.
You don't know if it's like a pretty well-known flower. It's like
hydrangea.
Hydrangeas, I don't know. All right, whatever. Yeah.
We actually there was a hydrangea bush.
See, there. Okay, so I'm not an idiot.
But before, but it's it was dead because they're really hard to maintain, especially when they don't get a lot of light. And ours is mostly.
Yo, we are coming for the neck of Joe the Gardener right now.
I know. You know who I have a lot of respect for Joe the Gardener. A lot more.
After getting landscaping done?
No, after trying to or attempting to do it ourselves for about 20 minutes.
So you were trying to do it, and then you're like, fuck, this is too hard, and you hired somebody?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
It's fair. Oh, wow, it's actually super nice out today, huh?
Yeah, it is. It's like 75 out.
It is 12:08, and I just got out of bed, and now I'm on the couch. I ain't eaten today. I ain't done nothing today. Because this is what happened. I wake up, and our beloved Washington football team benches our starting quarterback, so I've been working feverishly all day.
Yeah, I see that.
Your starting quarterback sucks.
Our starting quarterback?
Sorry. I guess you have Cam. Your replacement quarterback for Cam.
Oh, yeah. Did that surprise you that Brian Hoyer and Jared Stidham suck?
Stidham threw that really nice touchdown pass, though.
Yeah.
Hoyer was horrendous.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy that they were in it briefly.
Yeah, no, it was like a 3-point game.
I know.
What was the score? The half was 6-0.
It's like 6-3 or something.
I don't know what the Chiefs were doing. I barely watched the first half. I saw the second half when they blew you out, but I barely watched the first half.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like it was 13-3, and then I saw we were making a drive and we scored. I'm like, damn, like if we can just get a stop, this like first stop, and somehow get the ball back, this is actually a game. And then they scored two straight touchdowns.
Hoyer looked like he'd never played football in his life. It was.
Well, I mean, he hasn't in a while.
He's been on 7 teams. He just jumps around the league, and
when's the last time he's actually in a game? It's probably been 2 years.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I don't know why they didn't just keep Stidham in.
People were wondering that, like, what did he do? He must have just pissed Belichick off, did something.
Yeah.
Someone was like, he took a picture at the beach 2 years ago and hasn't had a snap since. Like, it could be anything.
Yeah.
Like, I think literally he's talking about, like, it was a bye week, and he put up, like, an Instagram picture from the beach, and Belichick got mad about it.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.